Hi, David. How are you
Hello,
doing?
my darling. All right?
I'm pretty good. How are
Yeah.
you?
I'm all right. Getting on. I'm completely changing. In a way I can't really articulate at the moment, but it's good. It's the most comprehensive work I've done on this, but it's the end of the line. It's the end of the road of this area. It's the last of its type. I'm not doing any more books like this again. It's about, the first two chapters are about the nature of reality up to the point that I've understood it so far, but the rest of the book is like telling the story of the manipulation on a five sense and a kind of interdimensional level as well. But that's the end of the road for me. What I want to do now, I want to know what this reality is, how it's generated, how it's manipulated, how it's become what it's become. That's where I'm going now, because unless we understand that, we can get caught. And I think a lot of conspiracy researchers have, because of their religious beliefs, they've got caught in gathering more and more information so they understand more about their own prison cell. But I want the key.
Well,
I
that's
know
the
it's a prison
thing.
cell, and I know it works, and I know how the prison cell's maintained. I want the key now, thanks. But from here on in, it's the key that I'm looking for. And I don't exactly know what that key's going to be, but that's where I'm going.
Well, we want to go there with you. Good evening, wherever you're listening, however you're listening. If you're in the archives, if you're live or on newsforthesoul.com, I'm Nicole Whitney, and this is News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. And he is back, one of my very favorite regular guests who we've talked to over the years, I think since just after 9/11, or was it just before? No, it was just after. David Icke, who you can find at davidicke.com. He is here, and he's going to talk about his newest project and new directions. Welcome to the show, David Icke.
Thanks, Nicole.
It's always a pleasure connecting. What's new for you?
Well, I don't know where I'm going, but I'm going somewhere different, that's for sure. Related to where I've been and what I've been doing, but I'm going to another level of it, and I'm kind of in the flux of the transformation, really. And so I don't know where I'm going, but I know I'm going with it. I've got this new book out, which is at the printers now, and it's available through the website for pre-order. It's called The David Icke Guide to the Global Conspiracy, and it's 28 chapters, or I call them dots, because it's a massive work of dot connecting, relating to the nature of reality, and then relating society and how it's controlled and manipulated to that nature of reality. Because so often people don't realize what's possible in terms of manipulation of their lives, because they're kept in the dark about the very nature of who they are and the nature of life and how it works. So, if you are a group of people who have this knowledge of how reality works and how we create it, passed on across the generations in the highest, most secret levels of the secret society network, and you know how we're creating reality, but the population you're manipulating don't, then you are already in a massive position of power. And so what I've done in the book is start off with the nature of reality and how it works and the illusory nature of it in terms of the so-called physical world, and then looked at the way society is run, what's happening today, the history of it and the symbolism of it, the whole kind of great range of different subjects. And once you see how basically reality works and how we create it, society and how it's structured starts to make perfect sense, if you realize that actually it's not structured for people, it's structured to control people. So like I say, it's 28 chapters or dots, and I connect dots between a massive range of apparently completely unconnected subjects and people. And it's the most comprehensive work I've done on this, but it's the end of the line. It's the end of the road of this area. I'm still going to talk about it in the media and stuff, and I'm still going to track the Orwellian state as it unfolds until we kind of reel it back through my website. But in terms of where I'm going and where life is pushing me, and as we've talked about many times, Nicole, I just follow my intuition. Where my intuition tells me to go or leads me to go, I go with it. And if my head's saying something else, well, it hasn't actually for a long time, they've been in sync. But if my head was saying something else, then I'd still go with my intuition. And it's pushing me into the area of, okay, we've looked at the prison cell. Now, where's the key? Where's the key to open the door? How is this prison cell created? What is the nature of reality? How do we generated? What is this collective reality that we're experiencing? Who created it? How is it created? How is it maintained? And it, symbolically, it's moving the emphasis from looking at the movie screen, not liking the movie, and going to the back of the movie theater and changing the reel, or seeing what the reel is and who's pressing the button of it. And it's taking the form of great changes in my life, where, you know, my life is changing dramatically. People are going out of it, other people are coming in, and what have you. And suddenly I'm getting tremendous number of requests to go all over the world to speak and to experience. And it's very exciting the way it's going. And it's like the coordination of these things is just extraordinary, in terms of people from different parts of the world will come on and talk to me about the same subject, I mean, sort of out of nowhere. And so that's where I'm going now. And I'm also getting more and more incredibly vivid dreams that are happening to me at this time. And so vivid, in fact, that there are many occasions when I have to really concentrate to work out whether I got this information in the dream or whether I got it in this dream we call the real world. Mm-hmm. And I'm going into great coma-like sleeps where it's beyond sleep. It's some deep, deep non-conscious state. And sometimes, that happened to me today, funnily enough, early on, sometimes I'm lying there and I wouldn't say I can't move my body, but I have no desire to move my body. And I just lie there and I can feel almost like the waves of consciousness coming back into this reality. So where I'm going, I don't know, but I'm going somewhere. And there's just so many things happening in my life which are pointing in the direction of, okay, we can see the problem now. What's the next level of it to really understand how we can turn it around? Because in the end, you know, if you, this is why my books have always been a mixture of five sense research and five sense information, plus always the rider that, you know, this is just one reality among infinite realities. And it's something that if we just concentrate on the fact that there's this reality and it's controlled by unpleasant, malevolent people, and this is how it's done, well, that's important information, very, very important information, because people can't set themselves free until they realize they're not free. And the great way that people are controlled and kept in a subservient state is by getting them to believe that they're actually living in a free country and they have freedom. So, as I've written about many times in the past, we live in a prison cell, but we can't see the bars. So, conspiracy research is absolutely, five-sense conspiracy research, is absolutely vital to pointing out to people, hey, look, here's the bars, look. And that's something that is absolutely essential to get across. And I will continue to do it, like I say, in talking in the media and on the website and stuff. But in terms of where my books are going and stuff like that, the question is then, where do we go to the next stage to understand more about this and therefore get the key to opening the door? Because if we only concentrate on what the problem is and what the manipulation is and all the rest of it, then what we're doing is gathering more and more information about our prison cell. Well, you know, I want the key, and that's where I'm going now. And where it's actually taking me, I don't know, but I know it's going to be amazing.
You know, it's just so interesting that you're mirroring and validating what a lot of us around here have been saying, and the recent theme on the show on News for the Soul for maybe change, like severe change in, for many people in the direction they feel real influx going on right now, and especially the dream thing that you mentioned.
Yep.
And the weird altered states. For me, that's been a few months of just, you know, I've given up trying to figure it out because I just can't. But it's very strange. Do you remember any specific dreams you've had?
Not really. I mean, they're very vivid when I wake up, and, you know, I make some notes sometimes, but they're extremely symbolic, I think. But of course, you know, it's working out what the symbolism means.
Mm-hmm.
The what I'm experiencing now is the vivid nature of them, where you cannot almost tell the difference between the asleep dream state and the awake dream state. It is extraordinary. I mean, I'll have dreams, like I did last night, for instance, about the the fact that I'm lying in the bed that I'm lying in, and there's things happening around me. And I'm in a dream state, but I'm experiencing things happening in the room where I'm asleep. And is this a dream, or is this happening, really happening? I mean, it's very difficult to make that judgment sometimes, because if you like, the solidity of the three-dimensional room that I'm in is in the dream state, is just as solid and tangible as it is in the awake dream state. And if anyone has any question or doubt that it is possible to create a physical world without being in a physical world, then they should have some of the dreams that I've had recently. And like you say, lots of people are having as this next stage of this awakening continues, because you know, it's all happening in a dream world, but it's just as solid as this one. And it's very strange. Sometimes I'm in those situations, I'm observing myself doing things, and then sometimes, and indeed in the same scene, if you like, I'll switch from observing my dream state doing things to looking through those eyes directly and being part of that. And it's like it's giving me more and more of a experiential understanding of the way that consciousness is really, whatever it is at any moment, it's just a point of observation. It's almost like you are moving around at will to observe the world from different points of view, and but it's the same you. And whether you're observing some dream state you doing something, or whether you're looking through the eyes of that dream state you, or whether you are waking up and saying, oh God, it's morning, that is that point of consciousness is just moving its point of observation all the time. And they're all you, and they're all your point of observation. It's just they're changing. Because we get so caught in the five senses, and why shouldn't we? Because we are born into this world, and then the five senses are the target of society from cradle to grave, as they say. If you look at the way society is structured, it's all about enticing, stimulating the five senses. And so what that does is it focuses your point of observation to basically one small area of observation, looking through your eyes into a five-sense world. But once you start to disconnect and start to get into a state of flux, and it can start to observe different realities, it can start to observe this reality from a different point of view, And suddenly you realize that, you know, looking through your eyes and this is reality. This is me. It's absolutely a tiny, tiny infinitesimal fraction of you or us. Mm-hmm. It's just it's just what is holding your attention of your point of observation at that moment. And we are going to have some incredible experiences. Those people, and there's going to be multi millions more as the days and weeks pass, as this change gathers. So we're going to have some wonderful, wonderful experiences. Well, I did the only time I've done psychoactive drugs was I took this rainforest plant called ayahuasca in 2003 when I was in the rainforest of Brazil. Took it a couple of times, and it took me to wondrous places beyond this reality. But I said after the second time, I could have taken it four times on that occasion, and I could have done it many times since, but I never have. Because I said after that experience, what I want to work towards is going to those places without psychoactive drugs. Because we can. I mean, it's about setting our consciousness free so it can move and it can observe, from consciously observe to us in this so-called five-sense body, these infinite places. And so I've been working towards that, and I can now feel that I'm starting to enter that area where my consciousness can now start to move around and not be encased and focused and magnetized towards just this five-sense reality.
Does it feel to you like we've entered that sort of time, or sort of on that pioneering new ground, the time that we talked about that was coming over the years, that we're there now?
Oh, I think so. I've been talking to a few people in recent days who have concentrated on the physics of it all. And it's amazing that when you talk to open-minded people in physics, rather than system-serving song sheet singers of mainstream science, what has been suggested, which is that we are entering a massive energetic change, it makes perfect sense to them. And one gathering explanation of this is that, and it's not the only one, I'm sure, is that every 26,000 years, and I think there's something happens around 13,000 as well, we move through to this precession of the equinoxes, which has of course been symbolized by the ancients broke up the heavens, the skies, into astrological segments, and that we're moving into an alignment which happens every, 26,000 years, it's just under actually, but near as damn it, into alignment with what they call the galactic center, at which point we get hit by this beam of energy. And this energy brings things back to balance, because it's like a computer program. I've talked about this before. At one level, this reality is a computer program, and it keeps playing through the program. It's what I call the time loop. And so I feel, and more, that there is a self-balancing mechanism whereby, as it moves into alignment with this galactic center, as each, if you like, astrological segment has been completed, it's almost like a rebalancing process. And the more out of balance that things have got, the greater the change is in terms of the energy movement from imbalance to balance. The more balanced it has remained through that period, the less change there is when these rebalancing moments happen. And when I first started, I mean, I've been doing this all my life without realizing it, non-consciously. I've been, as you know, many people have. When I look back at my life from my childhood right through to when I had my conscious awakening in 1990-91, I can see how my life was giving me the experience that I needed to do what followed the conscious awakening. But when it consciously started, I started bumping into psychics all over the place and wasn't looking for them. I bumped into them. I was only looking for one, the first one I went to. And the common theme at that time was information being given to me. I'm being told to tell you this and all the rest of it, that there was going to be what was described in that language as a spiritual revolution in my lifetime caused by a great energetic change. And that in the process of that change, all that's remained hidden would be brought to the surface. So what is happening with this conspiracy research, these conspiracy revelations, if you like, is that my books and work of others is a physical expression of this, all that's remained hidden coming to the surface. It's all part of this rebalancing time when we start to see what we couldn't see before, so that we can come to balance. And this is why the conspiracy research is so important, but it has not just to stand alone. It has to be part of this whole multi-level, multifaceted awakening and rebalancing that's going on. And so I think it's going to be an incredibly exciting time. I mean, you know, the Mayan calendar points to 2011, 2012, depending which researcher you talk to. 2012, of course, is the most famous year that the Mayan calendar is supposed to be linked to. But I don't see it as, you know, a great change in one moment, in one month, in one year. I think the 2012 is very symbolic of being in this window of time, maybe somewhere in the middle of it, I don't know, but in this window of what we call time, where this whole great energetic change, this one great cycle ends, another great cycle starts, and the next cycle is on a higher level. And I think the world is going to be a far nicer place to live. Well, I know it is. I know it is. When this transformation is over and it's awakened people to their true, infinite, and genius nature and potential, it's going to be a much nicer place than it has been this last cycle.
I'm always getting sent the link to Zeitgeist, the movie, which right. I did watch and intriguing. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I've seen it, yeah. They do a very, very nice intercut with me and a guy called Bill Hicks at the end, where we're talking about the same thing, you know, about the life being a ride, it's just a ride. And when you go on it, you think it's real, because that's how powerful our minds are. That. And they've intercut me doing that in a talk and him doing it in the original. They're brilliantly, actually, very good. So yeah, I did watch it, yeah. There's a heck of a lot more dots to be connected, but as far as it goes, I think it's very good, very, very good. It's excellent, very good.
I thought it was interesting the take on the change of the age and the new age coming in and how, you know, they're sort of metaphors rather than the, you know, catastrophe type apocalyptic ending in 2012.
I don't buy that at all. I mean, I think, you know, Nicole, when there is energetic change, everything is energy. I mean, look at a volcano, look at a flash of lightning, you know, look at a thunderstorm, look at a tornado, it's energy. Look at a hurricane, I mean, look at it. Weather changes are certainly on the cards, and indeed we're experiencing them to an increasing extent because of the energetic change. But I don't go for the Armageddon, end of the world stuff at all. I think that's not something that feels in any way right to me. Although there are going to be some great challenges because, you know, we're moving so fast. But the thing is, if you go with the energy, it, symbolically you get on the airbed and flow with the river as it goes faster and faster, then you can enjoy it. There'll be a few bumps, but, you know, hey, this is fun. If you resist it by trying to hold on to how things used to be, and how you saw the world before, then you symbolically you're like standing in this river trying to hold it back, King Canute style, and it's getting faster and faster and faster. And more energy is being used by you and being drained from you in the effort of standing still, standing up. So, and eventually you get washed away, of course, in that circumstance. And to a large extent, I think the people who've tapped into this early and have started to wake up to it early, or earlier, they're the lucky ones, really, because there's going to be great challenges for other people who are going to be asked to move very quickly, great chasms of perception or perceptional change are going to be asked of them in a very short period, and that's going to be a real challenge for a lot of people. That's, again, why it's important to get this information out so people can have some kind of fix on what's going on. Otherwise, it's all catastrophe. And one of the expressions, of course, of trying to keep this from people, keep this vibrational energetic change from people, is to tell them that global warming is caused by carbon dioxide emissions. When there's an energetic change going on, and there's fantastic things happening in the sun, which are generating more and more solar energy, and therefore more and more temperature. And so a technique of suppression that I call defending the first domino. Some people look at the way alternatives in alternative people, alternative ways of doing things are jumped upon in such a apparently over-the-top manner. For instance, you know, someone starts to do some kind of healing method on someone and the feds move in and you know, throw the key away, and you say, well, hold on a second, that's a bit over the top, isn't it? And so often you'll see these things, and they go, God, that can't keep talking about using a sledgehammer to crack a nut. I mean, what's the big deal about that? But it's defending the first domino, because if you take the symbolism of dominoes lined up, once the first one goes, the second one goes, the third one goes, and eventually they all go. And so they have to defend all these kind of subject areas from coming to public attention, you know, certainly in a positive way, because they know it's going to lead. For instance, if it's accepted that alternative methods of healing work, then the question is, why do they work? Not a domino's gone. How do they work? You know, on what basis? So what's the body if this works? How can this vibrational healing? What is the body? So who are we? And all the dominoes start to fall. And it's the same with this whole global warming thing. If you start the process of fantastic things are happening in the sun, it's affecting the temperature, what's going on here, then the process leads to dominoes falling to, hold on a second, there's some great vibrational or energetic change going on here. And have you noticed, by the way, how people are being affected by it? So the global warming scam, in terms of its cause, because the lie is in the why, is on one level it's about justifying more and more international law, and of course if you're a few and you want to control the many from a central point of the entire planet, then international law is what you must have, the law that everyone on the planet has to abide by. So anything that allows you to have international law is favoring your mission for centralized global control. It is also justifying more and more taxation to save the planet and all that stuff. But behind that, and, you know, there are real motives for it, but they're offshoot motives, because the real motive, I would say, is to hide what's actually going on. So when this energetic change brings about demonstrable things that you cannot ignore, be they weather, be they, you know, geological, be they whatever, you can say, oh, it's global warming. But of course, global warming is caused by carbon dioxide, so actually we're responsible for the carbon dioxide, so it's all down to us, so we have more taxation. The thing is to hide what's really causing it, because then we can have a real debate on the nature of reality and what's going on now.
So what's the next realm of investigation for you in your search for the key?
I don't know, to be honest. I have a simple philosophy, really, or a simple way of doing things, and I always have. I've written all these books, about 16 books now on the subject, something like that. By getting up in the morning, and whatever my intuition tells me, I go with it. And I'm just doing that. And I can see where the pattern of the urgings of what I need to do and where I need to go, and the way my life's changing to allow me to do that, it's leading me into these out there realms where the real answers lie, because this realm that we're experiencing and apparently looking into, in fact, it only exists in this form in our minds. It's a projection, and it's the projector that I'm seeking, and where that comes from. And I know that this path that I'm on now, in fact, it's just a continuation of the same path, but it's now, if you like, we're climbing some steps here, and we're going on to another level of this path, and it's going to lead me to the people, the experiences, and the knowledge that are going to allow me to understand this, and therefore, on a greater level, and therefore communicate it for people to make of what they will. But I know that's where it's going, and it's much more out of this world than in it, where my research will take me now. It's not going to be about reading government reports. It's not going to be about the normal run of conspiracy research. Dates, names, places. He said this, and look, he's connected to him. And this is why this massive work that I'm bringing out later this month is the last of the line. I want to go beyond that now, and the information for that is not going to come to me from you know, books and this level of information gathering. It's going to come to me by going out there and seeing it, and that's where I'm heading.
So we're sort of pioneering uncharted territory now.
Well, uncharted by me, I guess, but although it's just another part of me that I'm going to, just as it's another part of you and another part of everyone who's listening to this show. And it's about taking that information out there and bringing it into this realm where it can be communicated to people who are not getting out there consciously yet. But, you know, great progress is being made. I mean, goodness me, you know, sometimes we need to just take a breath and look at how far we've come. I mean, when I think, you know, the early 1990s, when I couldn't walk down a street in Britain without being laughed at by most of the people, when I, just after that, was doing talks to universities, because, of course, they saw me as a complete nutter, and therefore I was going to be the person that they could laugh at and make fun of and have a good night out making fun of this person. And, you know, there was a time when I walked in front of one audience at a university in Britain, and it was about 15 minutes before I could actually start talking because of all the, you know, uproar that was going on. Wow. And it was just, you looked at it and you thought, well, I feel to go on, but I don't know why, because I don't know how this is ever going to lead anywhere. Look at how people are perceiving me. But you keep going, and eventually, if what you're saying has validity, then that validity will be seen. It might not be as quick as you like it to be seen, but it will be seen. And I've just been invited to present this information at the Oxford Union, at Oxford University in November. And it's the first time that what I'm talking about and what I'm exposing and revealing has ever been presented to the Oxford Union, which is a debating society, although I'm going to be doing a presentation there, which goes back to something like 1820, and all the great prime ministers and a lot of the world's leading figures, not just prime ministers, but famous people in their various fields, have actually debated there or made presentations there. And now I'm been asked to go along and do that next month. Now, that is a given the fact that, you know, the Oxford University is one of the central points of manipulating education, that it's one of the world's, if not the world's, most elite university. And it's not the university that's invited me, it's the students that have invited me. They run the Oxford Union, not the university itself. And so it just gives you an indication of just how this awakening, this looking at the world in a new way, is actually starting to penetrate human consciousness. And it's, I mean, the thought of this would be ridiculous. I've been asked to present an award at a music award ceremony in London next month. And again, the thought of me being asked to do that a few years ago, oh, what, that nutter? No way, mate. What in for? And I'm being invited because of the interest in this area of music, hip-hop music, rap music, etc., in London, of my work. Wow. And you know, when I look back to the early 1990s and I look at what's happening now, it is demonstrable, it is absolutely demonstrable and tangible and touchable that this transformation of human perception is gathering pace now on a level that is going to transform the way that humanity sees itself, and therefore, with that transformation, the way it expresses that perception in daily experience and daily potential. It's an incredible time. Incredible time to be alive and to experience this. Well, we're always alive, but I mean, in this reality, consciously, to see this happening, it's just wonderful. And every challenge in my life, I've had a few, I've got a few now, but every challenge, every moment when you thought, I can't go on, but then you do, every disappointment, every betrayal of what you're trying to do that you've experienced, it all becomes worth it. Every single one of them becomes worth it when you start to see this stirring within more and more people, which is turning on the light and allowing them to see that they ain't Joe Bloggs and they ain't Mrs. Smith. They are infinite consciousness, infinite potential, all possibility, having an experience, having a point of observation in this reality. And therefore, they aren't powerless. They're all powerful. And the point which connects all these different expressions of the infinite is love, or what we call love. This is the point of connection. And when I talk about following my intuition, it's the same as saying following your heart, because the heart is not just something that expresses what we call love and often expresses possessive love, which is not love at all. I love you, therefore I own you is not love. It is mind at work, self-deluding itself. But when I talk about the heart is an intelligence. It's another point of observation of the world that is different from what you might call the head, the mind, the brain. That processes information in a certain way, and it's to do with mind, it's to do with emotion, and the heart processes information in a different way because it has a different perspective and it's connected to a different level of awareness. And therefore, if you follow your heart, what we call intuition, you're not, we talk about following a hunch, but we're not following actually a hunch. It just feels like that because you cannot articulate with language why you are going in this direction. You can't say I'm going here because, you just know you've got to go there. So we talk about it as a hunch, but it's not a hunch. It's high, extraordinarily high intelligence that we're connecting into. And because it is so high, it is beyond language. It is beyond the language that we have developed to express it. Therefore, we have to go with it without having to explain not only to others, but to ourselves why we're going. We just need to go. Because the head operates on a much lower level of perception, mind, thought, emotion, in the way that we experience emotion, we can use the language, we can find language often to express why we should do this intellectually, why we should do this emotionally, because we have lived in a reality dominated by the head and a mind and emotions for so long, thought and emotions. Because of that, we have developed the language to express that level of perception. Now our hearts are opening, and we're tapping into that level of intelligence, that level of awareness. We still haven't developed the language to describe that level of intelligence, but it doesn't matter, because language is just to keep the left brain happy. Knowing is to know which direction to go without knowing exactly why, which is why, I, as I said in this chat, that I know I'm going somewhere. I don't know where. I kind of know why, but not absolutely. But I don't need to know that. I don't need to know that. I just need to know that this is where I need to go. And the information and the understanding will come as I follow that path. I don't need to know everything to start with. And it's just having that desire to know, that desire for knowledge, that desire to tap into the full potential of who we are, that makes us walk down that path while the thought and emotional levels are screaming, no, 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 you can't do that. Well, I can, I will do that. And I'll go whatever it takes me, whatever the consequences are.
You know, you have gone through some of the most challenging years around holding strong on this stuff, beyond probably most of our comprehension on that level. And I'm just kind of reflecting as we're talking today that I should thank you, on behalf of myself and the listeners out there, because you've been such a strong voice of leadership in this change that we've been going through, and such an inspiration to others to also hold strong and stay on their path and trust that thing that we have no idea why we're listening to it. So thank you, David.
Well, that's nice of you to say that, but once I started this path, there was no going back. Once you really get on it and you start to become it, there's no going back, because walking away from the challenges and therefore walking away from the path is more unthinkable to you, more horrific to you, than actually taking the challenges to continue the path. And the thing is that the more that you face challenge and the more that you come through it and see that it's possible to do that, and on the other side of challenge comes the reward from continuing to walk the path, when other challenges come, although they may not be very nice, you know that on the other side you're going to be there, and you're going to get the benefit from continuing. And a lot of these challenges, that what we call challenges, they're just blockages. And often they're blockages within us, that the challenge, in fact, invariably, they're blockages within us that are part of the process of setting ourselves free. For example, you can have your worst nightmare that something is going to happen to you. And if you do that, whatever you fear is a block on your infinite potential. Anything that you fear, and anywhere you won't go because you fear it, or you fear the consequences of this, you are in an energetic prison cell. You're like firewalling off, using computer language, great areas of potential. Therefore, if you're going to tap into your infinite potential, all these roadblocks, mind blocks, thought blocks, perception blocks have to go. And what happens if you have that desire to to break out of these energetic eggshells, as I describe them, and express and tap into your infinite potential that you have, then what life does is it brings towards you, you bring towards yourself, if you only realize it, on a non-conscious level, these challenges which allow you to experience them, come through them, and realize on the other side that, well, that wasn't too bad at all. I mean, it might have not been nice in the experiencing of it, but hey, we're through it now. It's not too bad. And that area of challenge, now the block is gone, that great area of potential opens up because you're not frightened to go there anymore. And of course, we've talked about this many times, the greatest block of all is the fear of what other people think. That's what holds us in servitude to other people's versions of reality all the time. And I had this massive ridicule in England. It went on for years. I mean, it was like incredible. I mean, you know, when you had to say my name in the early 90s in England, or Britain thought I was a nutter and crazy and, you know, insane and all that stuff. So, and you come through it and you think, well, I'm still here. The sun still comes up. And you free yourself from these things that isolate us in a very, very small area of our potential. So in many ways, you see, I think we talked about it the last time we chatted, I recall. What I'm trying to do, because I've read a lot of accounts by near-death experiencers about what they experience when they leave the body, and their perception of reality, of this reality, changes often dramatically when they're out of body. They talk about invariably that they don't feel emotion in the way they felt emotion in the body. It's not that they're emotionless and cold, but they don't feel emotion in the same way. There's this real charged, extreme way that we feel emotion here, this electrochemical process that we call emotion. And they can see past, present, and future all in one moment. They know what has happened, what is happening, what is going to happen, and all that stuff. And it's like past, present, and the future all happening in one now. If you can, and just another point about that, invariably what they say is, I didn't want to come back. It was lovely. I've not met many or read accounts of many near-death experiences who actually wanted to come back. And what they say is when they come back into the body, their life's never the same again. They're not frightened of death. They don't see the world in the same way. And the thing is, if we can look and experience this reality in the way that we do, from that perspective of what it's like when we're out of this body with all its limitations and computer programs, then we will completely change the way we interact with this world. Because it's like, you know, you're trying to explain things to people about why you're doing this, why you're going on this path and all the rest of it. And they're not getting it. And so they're saying, oh, you shouldn't do that and all this business. What I've learned over the years is just not to explain yourself, because once those people leave the body and go into that out of body state, they realize what it was all about. They realize why you went in this direction. We get caught and diverted by explaining and justifying ourselves, or thinking we have to others that don't understand why we're doing certain things and why we're going into certain directions. You know, I don't do that. I say, look, I just got to go here. I feel to. I know I've got to go there. That's it. And then I go there. Because if I stop walking to actually explain or try to explain why I'm taking this course of action, why I'm going to this place, why I'm suddenly changing the way I do this or do that, then you spend so much of your time, every time you have an inspired, I've got to do this, explaining to everybody why it's happening. I don't do that anymore. Just, I'm going, and that's it. And I know that people that don't understand at this time, who might condemn me at this time or whatever, when they get into that out-of-body state, they'll understand why. They'll understand what it was all about then and why certain things happened they didn't understand at the time. And so I put that aside and say, look, there'll come a time when you'll see why I did this, but I ain't got time to explain it all to you now, okay, because I got to go. It's detaching from this feeling that everyone has to understand you, because you feel better if people understand you. People say, you know, oh, no one understands me. Well, you know, get used to it. Just get on with your life. People don't have to understand you. Get on with your life. Do what you feel is right. You do not have to get everyone to understand where you are. As long as you're there and it's good for you and it's right for you and it feels good to you, go for it. You don't have to justify everything you do to other people. because most of them won't get it anyway, unless they're in the space that you're in, and you won't probably get what they're where they are because you're not the space they're in. So look, let's just get on with it and stop running around trying to get everyone to agree with us, to like us, to respect us, to understand us. It's not necessary. We just think it is.
Well, there we go. Let's get on with it. And I'm looking forward to getting on with it and finding out about how it goes with you, David. And I know we're at the top of the hour, but I thank you so much for your time today, and keep us in the loop.
It's a pleasure, Nicole. I'm sure we've talked many times when I'm out there somewhere in La La Land.
And you know,
it's going to be fun.
As you're out there in La La Land, if you find something terribly, terribly interesting, I don't know if you're familiar with our life-changing TV, but CNN cameraman of 10 years was working in the European CNN and had heard my show over the years, and the voice told him to move to Vancouver and work with Nicole. So we worked together. We're a crack team, News for the Soul reporting with the former CNN cameraman. So if you find something really interesting, call me.
Okay, well, I mean, you've done a fantastic job, Nicole, and, you know, you're one of these people who has stuck with it against great odds and coming out the other side. And, you know, there's a lot of people now who have been in that situation who are seeing that the light at the end of the tunnel was not the light of an oncoming train. It was something very, very different, and the rewards are coming for those that have stuck with it.
I think we'd already been run over by the train.
Yeah, I know.
All right. Well, thank you, David. It's been a pleasure, and I look forward to our next chat. All the best.
Okay, thanks, Nicole. Bye.
David Icke, who you can find at davidicke.com. Your anger.